which was awesome. Don't get me wrong, I'm 16, 17, I'm earning 30 quid a game.
Of hoops
on a Saturday. Yeah, it's awesome. But then I signed my contract and went to £50 a week. Ooh,
balling.
What?
Balling.
Give me the money. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fozcast, the Ben Foster podcast. Before we get started today, I just want to say a massive, massive thank you to every single one of you who has listened, subscribed to all of our pods so far. We've only got three out, but at the moment of speaking, we are number one in the sports charts on Spotify, and I have not got a clue how we have managed that, because boys,
get on,
have we not just winged the life out of this?
Yeah.
We have winged it, honestly.
It's just three mates chatting shit, isn't it, really?
Basically.
Absolutely insane.
That's exactly it. We have just winged it. We get some nice people in. We speak about absolute gumph, but it seems that you guys are enjoying it. So long may it continue. Up the Fozcast. Let's get into it. Today, I am sitting in the podcast room with Rhino Legs Tom, Frank the editor, and we are going to talk about my career, the ups, the downs, the highs, the lows, the good, the bad, the ugly, all the indifferent, all the funny stories, all the in-between bits. Should we get into it, boys?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
It is about 400 degrees in here today.
It's very warm in here. I've got a little fan behind the screen. You can't see it. I am keeping myself nice and cool.
Ben's got two fans, prima donna, you know. Me and Frank, we're just left to sweat it all out.
Yeah, we're just here dying.
I'm the talent, guys. I'm the talent, guys, all right? You've got to look after the talent.
Cheers, Ben. Thanks.
Right, so Tom, Rhino Legs Tom is the guy coming up with all the questions, all the talking points from today. I have not got a clue what he wants to talk about, but he wants to talk about something because he says, I've got a wicked idea for the Ben Foster podcast. So let's get into it, boys. Let's have it.
Go on, Tom.
Yeah. Long career. Very low. You're an absolute dinosaur at this point, aren't you, mate?
It feels like I'm a dinosaur, mate. Every day when I get out of bed, especially at the minute, it's pre-season at the minute, guys. It's hard work. Getting out of bed in the morning, I am creaking, I'm cracking. It's hard, but it's fine.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's pre-season.
We've just finished the Euros. So what, 10 days ago, week ago, 10 days ago, the Euros finished. Give us your little wash-up on that.
Okay, so you know, obviously, I got tickets to the final. So I took Louis to the final, which I've got to say, the actual inside the stadium was fantastic. It was absolutely brilliant. The atmosphere was top class. Didn't see no trouble whatsoever inside the stadium, me personally. Obviously, getting to the stadium and after the game.
Can I just stop there really quickly? Inside the stadium, there was booing on the national anthem.
Yeah, for sure. Which I knew that would happen. Yeah. I knew that would happen.
And I was really happy you brought it up in the vlog as well.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think anybody's national anthem, you have to respect the national anthem. That's just common courtesy.
When we talk about in this country, though, hooliganism, football fans get a bad rap, and people often say, it's the small minority, it's a small minority. Well, the booing of the national anthem, is unacceptable, and that was not a minority.
No.
That is a large percentage of the stadium booing that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that side of it is what really does give England as a country a bad name. I think if you look in the comments on the video I did for the vlog of obviously going to the Euro final, there's a lot of different nation fans getting in the comments and saying that that side of it is what makes the rest of the world basically not want England to win. That is what it is. It's that kind of hooliganism, booing the national anthem, all those kind of things. It just doesn't go down well, but I don't see why people need to do it. You know, you just respect. It's a minute. Not even that. The Italian national anthem is a banger, isn't it? It is such a banger.
This is a cultural thing, though, and I don't always like the comparison between rugby and football. I don't always like that. And you know, I played both growing up, and it just wouldn't happen.
Not in rugby.
No, it wouldn't happen.
No, it wouldn't happen in rugby.
Is this a grassroots up thing?
Yeah, I think for me, the problem on the day was the fact that it was an 8 o'clock kickoff and literally everybody was just shit-faced. They were absolutely shit-faced. You could just tell. People were walking like zombies. They were walking up Wembley Way like zombies.
Was that not the Rona, though? The old super spread?
Honestly, everybody was out of their head, already drunk because... They've been on an all-dayer.
Do you think it would be different if it was a midday game?
Yeah, it would have been different. I'm still pretty sure they would have been booing in the national anthem. Mm. But let's, you know, that it is what it is, and I think we need to learn our lesson from that a little bit.
Let's look at the positives, because you were in the England setup for a long time. Being at like a number two as such, you might not have had the caps, i.e. 40, 50 caps, but you were in the setup for quite a long time, weren't you? When you were in the setup, what was the dynamic like? Because you hear of that generation of the Gerrard. It was the Man United and the Chelsea or the Arsenal. Were there cliques?
For sure. Massive cliques. There were, like I say, you used to have the Man United clique and you would have the London clique, the Chelsea's, the Arsenal's. And that's for sure how it was, because there was probably six or seven players from Man United. There were seven or eight players from Chelsea, Arsenal, or that, and they were sitting on different tables. It wasn't spoken about, and it wasn't an obvious thing because everybody did get on, but there was always that sort of underlying belly.
And look at it now. From the outside looking in now, when you look at the lads, I mean, they have been world class.
Yeah.
Both brilliant on the pitch, but to bring the country together, I've kind of, over the years with football, kind of drifted away in terms of that fanatical kind of feeling. But now that we've both got lads that are at an age where they love it, I feel like they've really garnered the nation. I mean, what's it like as an ex-England player looking in now?
I totally agree. I think we've all found that connection back again, haven't we, with the national team, and we want to get behind them, we want to support them, we want them to win. And don't get me wrong, when you lose a final, there's going to be a little bit of upset about it, and we should have done this, we should have done that, and you know, that's kind of by the by, that will always happen. But I would say that we are much better at the minute of getting behind our team and supporting them, because they are so much more personable. I think people have really started to see the personalities of these players, and because we're allowed so much more access to them through social media platforms and through the way that Gareth Southgate allows the media to come inside and really, you get a feeling for what these people are like. It humanises everybody, and I think that's the bit that's been lacking for a long time.
I'll tell you what I loved is, and there was a little bit of it depends on which side of the fence you sit, really. So after the final, some of the lads went, was it Mykonos or Portugal or somewhere? They went away together, and you've got different players from different clubs. And as a fan looking in, I think that's brilliant, because they finished their time and you can tell they're not going to go on holiday together if they don't get on. They don't. There isn't that real unity. So looking at it, and I think they've been together for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. They've worked their absolute bollocks off. Came really, really close, and they're going and having a good time together, and you think nobody can begrudge them that.
It's nice, isn't it? It's just like, they're like lads, they're just like normal lads going on all day, having a nice time. Yeah. But they've all got about 10 mil in the bank.
good living,
huh?
yeah, so brilliant.
I'm super proud of the boys and what they've done. Really enjoyed the Euros, and I think after everything we've been through for the last year and a half, it did bring everyone together, like you said.
Come on, boys, bring it home. Never incredible. Mind. Qatar, we'll go, what is it, 2022? Qatar.
Next year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Soon comes around.
December.
Certainly does. So, right, we've done England. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Let's get back onto the career pod now. So take us back to the absolute start, because we've had lots and lots of people saying, I want to hear more about your stories, Ben. Even when we had Thogden in, the guest, and he's like, I want to hear your stories. And you're like, well, this is your podcast. It's about you guys. So it kind of prompted us and said, let's do a career podcast. So where did it all start? Because you didn't have a conventional route into football, did you?
No, I didn't at all. Completely the opposite way of what it goes nowadays. I think you are finding a lot more players that will do it this route now, like the likes of Jamie Vardy, even Chris Smalling, players like that, who have gone the route of playing for semi-professional teams and then getting a bit of a break and then finding their feet later on, like in their early 20s. So I left school at 16. I was a chef for 2 years at Café Rouge in Leamington Spa. I was playing non-league football for Racing Club Warwick, who's my local semi-pro team. And I was doing well. I was, you know, I was playing some decent football sort of thing. I was still obviously a very young goalkeeper, 16, 17. And one game, a Stoke scout came and saw me play, and that's it. They came in and bought me. I remember them buying me because I had actually, obviously Racing Club Warwick knew that there were teams looking at me. So they made me, not made me, but they kind of sneakily got me to sign a contract.
Which is what anyone should
exactly,
do.
Exactly, really. Yeah, they got me to sign a contract. And to be honest with you, I was quite happy I did as well, because I wanted to make sure that they got something out of the deal. You know what I mean? If Stoke were going to pay some money to somebody, I'd rather it go to Racing Club Warwick. And absolutely, they didn't get a lot. I think it was something like £5,000 up front.
But in that level,
it's massive.
It's big.
£5,000 is massive.
Really helps. And yeah, and when you signed for Racing Club, your contract, what did you get? Like a bag of hula hoops as your sign on?
Mate, I was on £30 a week per game,
yeah,
before the contract started, right? And then, which was awesome. Don't be wrong, I'm 16, 17. I'm earning 30 quid a game.
Few bottles of hoops, that is,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's awesome. But then I signed my contract and I went to £50 a week.
Ooh, balling.
What?
Balling.
Give me the money. So I was like balling on 50 bags a week.
You wish,
£50 a week. Yeah, so I was like the highest paid player in the team, like going all to all the older lads, going, unlucky lads. I was cashing them off all sorts of I might be getting a 1.2 Renault Clio soon, lads, unlucky. Yeah. So yeah, that was pretty cool. But then obviously Stoke came and bought me, and then I signed for Stoke City, and like I say, they paid £5,000. It could have rose to a certain amount on appearances, but it's never really materialised. But my very first contract at Stoke City, I was on £250 a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, though, I'm 18 years old and I'm a full-time professional footballer on £250 a week. I'm living in Diggs and I didn't have anything to pay for. I was living the life, honestly. I'd just turned pro. It was incredible.
And when you were at Stoke, what league were they in at the time?
Stoke were in League One at the time.
So like the Championship?
No, one below that. Yeah, they were in League One.
At your time during Stoke, obviously you got loaned out a lot, but you had some real kind of colourful characters, and it was like you entered football at kind of like a time where it was like the last of the old guard, wasn't it? So you had some like big old bruisers in the changing room. John Rudge, he was like director of football?
Yeah, Stoke, yeah, sure.
And who was the manager when you...
The first manager was a guy called Gudjon Thordarson. Right. He was like an Icelandic guy. They had a massive connection with an Icelandic team, Stoke did. So they had always like Icelandic players or Icelandic managers, people like that. He was fine, to be fair. I never really got to see him much. I'm kind of in the youth team, reserve team at the time, so I didn't have much sort of contact with those sort of guys. But yeah, that was at that time. You had some real old school, like people like Jerry Taggart, then
Peter Handyside,
all those
was
kind of guys.
Hoekstra there?
Peter Hoekstra. Who else? Dutch midfielder, lovely player, by the way.
Carl Henry. Kick about, yeah, with Carl Henry,
yeah,
didn't you?
He was the guy who got me into gambling. Cheers, Carl.
Yeah, nice one there. I think, I'm guessing he was earning a couple more quid than
he
you
was definitely
time.
Earning more money than me, yeah, for sure.
But there were some good talented players at the time, so you, in the youth structure, that had good careers, weren't there?
Yeah, there was. Like I say, Carl Henry had a good career.
Richard Keogh,
Chris Commons,
yeah.
Had a lovely left foot, by the way. He had some really bad injuries later on in his career, which sort of really hampered him, but he was a lovely player for a while.
He was class at Celtic, wasn't
really,
he?
Really, really good. Andy Wilkinson, players like that. The goalies at the time, it was funny because we had Ed De Hoy. Do you remember Ed De Hoy?
Yeah,
goalkeeper? He was incredible. Lovely, honestly, what a lovely bloke. But he was nearing the end of his career, but he didn't care. He would just come in every day. He used to wear a bum bag. He didn't care.
Like,
he was just having a nice time. But lovely bloke. Neil Cutler was a goalkeeper. Steve Simonson, Mark Crossley for a little bit. Real sort of old school goalkeeper.
But like people like Neil Cutler, you're still friends with now, aren't you?
For sure. Very good goalie coach, Neil Cutler. Really good goalie coach. He was my goalie coach at West Brom for only a season, and then he got sort of snapped up by Villa really quickly. But one of the most technically gifted goalkeeper coaches you could want to work with for any young goalies that work. So you see, he's working with Villa at the moment. Emi Martinez, who's just gone on from being a good goalkeeper to the next level at the minute. Do you know what I mean? He's probably one of the best goalkeepers up there in the top 10 in the world at the minute.
And what about at that time, like the kind of boys' club and the drinking culture? And like I said, there was a couple of players on that list that kind of fit the bill. So was it a kind of thing, or were you a bit young?
I was still too young for that. Like I say, I was, it was just, we had such a young, like a young pool of talented players, like I say, the likes of me, Carl Emery, Chris Commons. We didn't really get into that drinking side of it. We were too young. We were like 18, 19, 20. So it was just sort of more going and playing snooker and frigging, do you know what I mean? Casino, that kind of stuff.
Adi Akinbaye there.
Yeah, Adi Akinbaye. Big shout out to Adi. What a guy, by the way. Honestly, Adi Akinbaye, wow. I think he was probably one of the first people who, like took me under his wing. He used to always come up to me and be like, Fozzy, you've got a bit, you know, you could genuinely go and do a bit in this football game. Don't settle for just not playing or just kicking about as third choice at Stoke City. Do you know what I mean? He was like, go and knock on the manager's door, go and tell him you want to go out on loan, go and play, all that kind of stuff. And he was massive for me. He really looked after me. And he was a guy that made me go and say, I want to go out on loan and
but
start
you
playing.
You remember that 20 years later, you remember that. And I know that you will have those conversations with the young lads at Watford now and previous clubs. How important is it to have players like that around? Because they talk about it when Jordan Henderson was in the England squad and they were saying he hasn't played and people, you know, that Roy Keane thing with he's a cheerleader, what's he doing? Is he doing card tricks? How important is it to have those players around?
It's honestly so important. Like, so when I was younger, people used to say about experienced players and players with experience, and I used to think, no, like, experience isn't a thing. It's about talent. It's about what you've got. It's about what you can do right now. Talent, that's all that matters. It's not, honestly. Like, I know I'm an older player now, but experience is so important, ridiculously important. It is.
But with experience comes judgment. And for a goalkeeper, that's incredibly important because, you know, you're centre mid, you give a loose pass away or make the wrong decision, you can get away with it a lot of the time. Goalkeeper, it's a goal. So when you were at that age, you got farmed out on loan a lot, which was really good, you know, for you.
It was incredible. Honestly, for me, when I was younger, all I wanted to do was go and play first team football. I've always said it all the way through my career. Training is nice, and that's where you can learn the basics to an extent, but it's getting out on loan. It's playing. Like, I've been out on loan to so many teams. Stafford Rangers, Tiverton Town, Wrexham, Kidderminster Harriers, and that you all learn different things from them. You go into a different change room with a different dynamic of players and different group of people, and you need to learn how to get on with those people and how relationships work and what their style of play might be. Another team might have a different style of play. I'm playing at Tiverton Town where there might be 100 fans in the stadium and you can hear every single one of them slating you and killing you and abusing you. But it's awesome. Everything is just another facet to your game that you're learning.
But you're picking up things everywhere you go,
everywhere,
right?
Everywhere, yeah.
And dropping things as well.
For
so you're
sure,
seeing
literally.
Things that you're thinking, but you know you're seeing things that might not work for your game, certain things that managers might do that you don't enjoy, and then you go to another club and they do it a totally different way, and you think, you know, that's good, that's not good, I take that, I won't take that
for sure. When you said earlier about how you can pass it on to the younger players, and I always just try and say to the younger players, like, learn who you are, not only within football but out of football. Just be comfortable with who you are as a person, and once you can do that, that's when you can start to learn what your limitations and capabilities are as a footballer. And as long as you operate in between them two, you won't get found out, because if you're honest with yourself and you say, I can't do that and I can do that, stay in between there, boom, you can smash it from there, honestly.
And it's interesting because someone like Harry Kane had a lot of loan spells.
Yeah, he did.
A lot of loan spells.
A lot of people have said about him as well that when he was younger, like when he went out on loan to Preston, Leicester, all those kind, they could not see him becoming the player that he is. They genuinely didn't think he would have anywhere near the career that he's got at the minute.
But that's about different people developing
at different times.
Also, I heard a comment about Harry Kane last week, which I thought was really interesting, because you don't often hear comments quite like this. And they said he is the most streetwise footballer in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And you look at how he uses his body and everything else, and you think, playing in these leagues with... he's coming up against big, horrible defenders, and it's maybe a little bit more volatile, I guess, and the referees aren't quite on top of you. It's going to stand him in good stead, isn't it?
He's so clever. The guy is a joke. He's for me, don't get me wrong, there's three or four, but he's one of the best strikers in the world. So at the minute, he's obviously been linked with the likes of Man City. If he gets the move to Man City...
game over.
It's guaranteed.
Monopoly.
As long as he stays fit, which he should do, he gets some ankle injuries here and there, but he's guaranteed to score goals. He does what it says on the tin. It's literally as simple as that. They're buying themselves a 30 goal a season striker.
And
almost as a guarantee.
Yeah.
So for me, I'd say, if I'm Man City and you can spend 100 million on him or 130 million on Kane, just go and get Kane, because you know for a fact he's going to do it. It's a simple, he's so clever. You saw in the Euros there, the amount of times where he would drop a little bit deeper into sort of that, into the midfield almost, or even a little bit more, and he would get hold of the ball and he was able to put his head on a swivel and he would know exactly where other players are around him. He would know where to turn his body so the opposition can't get it off him. He was buying fouls right, left and centre. And then when he gets the ball into his feet, he's in dangerous positions. He doesn't need any backlift to be able to just smack it in the goal.
Yeah.
He's an animal, honestly.
He's class. He's class. And nearly brought it home, didn't he? But
exactly,
there you go.
Exactly.
Going back to the career then. So Stoke, just rattled. We were not going to go through each loan because you had a few. So you touched on a couple there. So what were your loans?
So yeah, like I say, I went very first loan I did was Bristol City. I went as backup keeper there, number two. Which Steve Phillips was the goalkeeper. Thoroughly enjoyed it, honestly. It's great to be part of the first team, see how it worked on a match day, all that kind of stuff. I was only there for a month, but honestly, I absolutely loved it. Great football club, Bristol City as well. And then back from there, went out on loan to Kidderminster for the end of the season. I only played a couple games because one of the goalkeepers got injured at Stoke and I had to be recalled. Again, it was great. We're training on park pitches. You know, you're playing on a Saturday afternoon and in front of probably a couple thousand fans, which was, again, was wicked. It was a massive step for me. Just playing in front of a couple thousand fans, you'd really sort of like the pressure's on almost. So yeah, two games there, then got back. And then the best loan for me really was Wrexham. That was where it all started.
Tiverton was in
obviously
between.
Yeah, we had a few in between. I had a few in between. Tiverton Town, I was there for a couple of months. Brilliant. Went on holiday to Mallorca with them in the summer.
Bludger. Go on, Bludger.
There's a few lads like the manager Martin Rogers. He's been there since day one. He's managed over 1,000 games.
Wow.
Outrageous.
Incredible.
A real sort of family orientated, tight knit club. Like the guys at the time were so, they were just such a wicked bunch of lads. Like I said, we went to Mallorca on holiday, had a wicked time. Magaluf, all that kind of stuff when I'm young. It was
that one's for another day, yeah?
No, wicked. One of the lads was a sicko, right? Bludger, his name was. A big, tall, like, centre-back, 6'5", 6'6". Big youth. He was like an oaf kind of thing, but lovely bloke. He was an animal. If you got a few beers down him, right, sicko. And there was one time, right, and it's not even funny because I think he got arrested at the time, but it was like a barman was carrying a tray of drinks or something like that, and he's walking to take him to whatever, and he's just gone up and two-footed him. On the friggin' there, in the middle of everybody.
On like the dance floor.
Drinks flying everywhere kind of thing. Police got called. I think he ended up in the cells for a day or two. He's an animal,
Jesus.
Mate. Lovely bloke. Apart
Brilliant.
From that, he's a lovely,
lovely bloke.
So apart from two-footed people.
Guy.
So you mentioned it when it really kicked into life was Wrexham. And this is what started a real intricate series of events that really pushed on your career.
Yeah, so this is the bits and bobs about football that people don't really see so much. So I'm on loan at Wrexham and I'm doing really well at Wrexham.
League two, like the old fourth division.
Maybe
type.
League one, league two,
yeah,
I'm not sure. It was when we won the Aldi V Vans trophy. But I was doing really well at Wrexham. Obviously, this is where I got the move to Man United because Darren Ferguson was there, who's obviously the son of Alex Ferguson. And he said to me at the end of the season, you know, what's happening next year with you at Stoke? And I only had a year left at Stoke. And I said, I don't know, really, to be honest with you. I just want to go and play football. I'm not going to play at Stoke. And he said, well, listen, don't do anything silly. Don't sign any new contracts or anything like that, because I'm pretty sure my dad wants to sign you for Man United. And I'm like, wow, this is outrageous. This is beyond. Like, he's like, don't tell anybody. Keep it quiet. But I'll know for a fact I was straight on the blower, sort of telling everybody, ringing you guys. Oh, my God, listen to this. It was crazy. But so I finished the season at Wrexham, did really well, and I'm still on I think I was on 350 quid a week.
At this point,
at Stoke.
You have not played a first team game for Stoke.
No, still.
And Man United.
I've been
sniffing.
There 3 or 4 years maybe.
Incredible.
And they've just loaned me out and I haven't played any games for Stoke.
Yeah.
And I'm on £350 a week at this time, yeah. And then obviously Stoke get wind that some of the big boys are looking at me. I've done really well. And they were like, we want to offer you a new contract. You know, we wanna tie you down to a 3 or 4 year deal. And I think, come on. Like, obviously I'm not gonna sign it. I know I'm not gonna play here, but you know what I mean? It's going to make it so much easier for me to move to another team if I've only got a year left on my deal. Do you know what I mean? So I rejected everything. I remember getting brought into the manager's office and then you had the chief executive there at the same time saying, you should do it. It's a really good deal. And I didn't have an agent at the time or anything. And they're pulling me in saying, sign this, basically. And I'm like crapping myself. It's horrible.
And
like,
you didn't have an agent?
No, didn't have an agent at the time.
At all?
No, and the pressure they're putting on you is phenomenal. Like, I'm crapping myself.
And this is on a wing and a prayer from Darren Ferguson saying,
exactly,
my dad's interested.
But they got wind of it. They knew that, because I'd done so well, that there were other teams looking at me for sure.
Is it like that now? Would they still like pressure players?
There's still a lot of that goes on in football where they will pressure the younger players.
Wow.
Yeah. They will get them in without the agent being there and they will tell them this, tell
try
them that, do this, do that. And they'll try and do it underhand. And it's a bit sneaky, really, to be fair.
Yeah, that's not on.
It's not on at all. No, it's not.
The shop window, though, was was the LDV Vans final. So Sir Alex Ferguson went to watch Wrexham, his lads managing. So he personally scouted you.
Yeah, it was really good. It was awesome, to be fair, because after that game, there were probably about six games left of the season. And like I say, Darren Ferguson pulled me aside probably, I think it was a week or two after that final. And he said, you know, don't do anything silly in the summer, but my dad's watching you for Man United and I've still got four or five games left to play of the season. So every game I'm going into it thinking, oh, don't mess up. Please don't mess up. And I know for a fact that he came to a couple of the games, Alex Ferguson did. He's there with Tony Coton, the goalie coach, and they're watching me and I can see them watching me. And I'm thinking, shit, do not mess up, please. Jeez. But we got through it anyway. And then, like I say, it all materialised and thankfully I did. I managed to get the move to Man United.
And when you signed for Man United, I'll put my little spin on it first because I was at a barbecue at my mum's house and you rang me, you'll have rang your family and a couple of mates, and you rang me and said, I've signed for Man United. And it was like a 4-year contract. And I was like, this was Man United in
the pomp.
Their heyday.
Yeah, the pomp.
And I was like, get the fuck out. Seriously? And you're like, yeah. And I remember like putting the phone down, and obviously my parents knew you, know you really well and everything, and I was like, Ben's just signed for Man United.
Can I tell you a funny story quickly as well? We had so like I said, I said Kyle Henry he got me into gambling massively when I was younger. And I remember this one occasion, it was incredible, right? We were playing darts in the changing rooms. We had a dartboard in the changing rooms and stuff. And we were playing for money. And Carl Henry was a mug, all right? He was so easy to take money from. I used to beat him at snooker, darts. I'm a sport billy, so I'm decent at most sports, yeah? And I would just play him at darts. And I would I'd hustle him a little bit. And I'd be like, oh, come on, let's play for a bit of money then. So I remember I was about 800 quid up on him playing darts, yeah? It was awesome. I'm thinking, 800 quid? I'm on like 350 quid a week here at Stoke. And I'm 800 quid up at darts. It's amazing. And then I knew obviously about Man United, but I was keeping it quiet. And then one of the lads came in, right? And he went, Fuzzy, it's on the news. Man United are trying to buy you. And I kind of just I think I went bright red. And I was like, yeah. And Kyle Emery is literally like mid dart throw gone, are you going to Man U? And I've gone, I don't know. And he went, if you go Man U, will you let me off the money? And I was like,
not a chance, mate.
I said, Carl, if I go to Man United, I'll let you off the money. It's not a problem, mate. All right. And he went, all right, sweet. So we carried on anyway, regardless. But yeah, I did. I let him off the money as well. He texted me the other day, actually. And don't know how we got onto it, but I texted him about it saying, I'm sure you still owe me 800 quid from that darts match you used to play on the thing. But that is funny, mate. It's funny. Isn't
right,
it?
Let's look at your first day at Man United, because you had a little incident. Not an incident.
Just before that, I just want to touch on the point of you went from £350, right?
Yeah.
To United signing you. What was that moment like of the actual... You know,
signing the contract and seeing the figures on the thing.
And, you know, moving to United.
Right, so...
That must have just been...
So when I signed for Man insane, United, right? I'll tell you what I earned when I signed for Man United. Okay, bearing in mind, I was still fairly young. I think they signed me for about £1 million.
You going in as number three, four?
No, I was like three or four or something like that.
Because you
were...
So at the time when you signed, Van der Sar... Kuchar
had just signed. Kuchar,
Luke Steele.
I think they were just about to sign Kuchar. Yeah, Luke Steele was there. Tom Heaton was there.
Wow.
There were quite a few goalies, to be fair. Tim Howard was still there, actually. There was quite a few goalies. I knew I wasn't going to be around the team for a while. I knew I was going to go straight out on loan. And that's cool. I was buzzing to just go out on loan and play some football. But I remember signing the contract and seeing how much... At this point, I've obviously got an agent, because as soon as you get linked to someone like Man United, you've got agents right, left, and
center. Your phone goes hot, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Your hot property, so every agent wants to know. So anyway, I had an agent at this point. You know, the contract's in front of me and I can see the signing on fee and the weekly wage. It's all there in front of me. And the signing on fee was 60 grand. Yeah, oh my God. So they're going to put just 60 grand just straight into my account. I was like, wow, this is outrageous money, life-changing money kind of thing. And the weekly wage, I was on 5 grand a week. So bear in mind, I'm 22, whatever. And I've gone from 350 quid a week onto £5,000 a week in my first year at Man United. It was honestly life-changing money. But I remember when the money actually hit, that when that signing on fee actually hit into my bank account, they send a letter with it as well. So a letter got sent to the house from HSBC. And literally the next day, the HSBC branch managers ring me up going, hi Mr. Foster, listen, we'd love to just get you down, we'd love to upgrade your account to a premier account and kind of stuff. And that's the way the world works. As soon as you have a little bit of money or something like that, just everybody wants to know about it.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Mad.
Interesting. So
life-changing.
Life-changing.
It is. And then at United you got brought back down to earth. a little bit, because there was an interesting story you told me recently with Rio.
Rio, yeah. So I was only at the club for about probably a week or 2 weeks before I was sent straight out on loan to Watford, because the season was sort of going to be starting in the next week or two. So I was only there for a little bit, just did a bit of training with them, got to meet a few of the lads, all that kind of stuff. But the very first training session, I joined in with the senior players, with the first team. Like, bearing in mind, I'm shitting myself at this point. I am shitting it. Like, I'm training with the big boys, like Ronaldo, Scholesy, Giggsy, Rio, Rooney, all them bad boys. And we've gone into a six-a-side, and I'm on Rio's team and a few others, and Rio's just turned around to me and he's gone, goalie, what's your name? It's Rob, isn't it? And I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, get out.
It's horrible, mate. No, it's Ben.
Ben. Know your place.
No, it's Ben. And he went, oh, yeah, Ben. And I was saying, oh, God, it's horrible.
And then another, straight into another story, but you were with, like, Ronaldo. I think, was it Rooney a little bit later, but big boys, Rio and Scholesy, Giggsy and everything. And tell us the little one about how good you knew the players were, and the one was Scholesy.
Yeah, the Scholesy story is class, because I it was like my first day training with them, kind of thing, and I'm just watching in awe, because like these guys that I'm used to watching on the telly are right in front of me, they're meters away, and they were doing like a passing drill into a shooting exercise, and somebody just zings a ball out, I think it was Giggsy, zings a ball out to Scholesy on the wing, and he does it first time, takes it in his stride, takes a first time half volley ball straight out over to the other side, and I'm just, I must have involuntarily just gone, wow. Oh my God. Like, and Tony Coton's, because we're still doing the goalkeeper training at the time, and Tony Coton's next to me, and he's just gone, who was it, Scholesy? And I've just gone, yeah, it was. And he's just kind of looked at me and going, yeah, mate, that's just how it is. That's how it is. And that's why, like, all the big boys, all the legends of the game, the Xavi, the Iniestas, Messi's, all them kind of guys, always say that Scholesy's one of the best players I've ever played against, or love to watch the most. And the same for all the Man United lads, always used to say the same thing, Scholesy's the best player. And he was, he was so effortless for him.
Yeah.
What a player. So you loan then, so obviously at United, straight out to Watford in the Championship. You weren't amongst the favourites to get promoted, were you?
We were favourites to get relegated that season. Yeah, we were favourites to get relegated, and because they had just escaped, like on the last day of the season before, they had just escaped relegation, basically.
Manager?
Adi Boothroyd. And we went into that season favourites to get relegated, but... I've got to say, Adi Boothroyd, what a guy. Like, wicked shout out to Adi Boothroyd. Brilliant bloke, brilliant man manager. He found a style of play that suited us so well. We were basically just a bunch of big lads. And he was like, right, get the ball forward as quickly as you could.
You had a massive team.
Massive team. Darius Henderson up front, honestly, what an animal. Big, big sort of battering ram. He would just knock it down for Marlon King and Ashley Young, and they would just go and score all the time. It was incredible.
So you had some good players, didn't you? Yeah. Marlon King. Yeah. Darius Henderson, yeah. Ashley Young
got a big
Clark
move
Carlisle.
The season after, a couple of years after, yeah. Gavin Maher, James Chambers, Malky McKay,
Hammer Bawatsa,
a hula hoop. So monster munch, not hula. His feet were like monster munches, honestly. They were all like, they're horrible feet. He had a hammer of a left foot though, honestly. But yeah, like I said, the first season, again, it was just me getting used to playing really competitive first team football in front of 15, 20, 30,000 people every week. And it was a massive learning curve. And it took me a while. Honestly, it took me a while at first to get used to it, because I wasn't used to being a first team goalkeeper and being relied on and people looking up to me and needing me to do a job every single week reliably. I was still sort of, I lived just around the corner, but I was still late every day. The reason why I had to literally buck my ideas up was because I had been late for a match day once. We were playing at home to Leeds and it was on the telly. It was a 5 o'clock kickoff or something. I thought it was a 7 o'clock kickoff. And I've turned up to the stadium and I've seen fans literally, like, loads of fans. I'm thinking, what on earth? Why is there so many fans here? My phone is on the seat next to me. I've looked at it. Missed calls for fun. Oh my God. Oh, I must have had 20 missed calls. Oh, the panic, mate. The panic just went, oh no. Quickly looked at it. The manager's rung. Everybody, all the players have rung. What on earth? Oh, quickly. Oh, I'm coming. I'll be there. I'm one minute away, mate.
And what happens in a situation like that? What were the repercussions?
So he fined me a grand. He fined me a £1,000 for
got
being
off there,
late.
Didn't you?
Got off super light. But the worst part of it wasn't the fine. It wasn't that. It was the fact that he said, Adi Boothroyd said, right, you are so sloppy. You are ridiculously sloppy. You need to learn from this. So he says, I'm going to write a letter to Sir Alex Ferguson and I'm going to tell him exactly how sloppy you are. And I was like, okay.
Okay. Wow, you do horrible. Not want that.
Oh, it was horrible.
Did he write the letter?
Oh, he wrote the letter. He showed me the letter and he wrote it and he basically graded all of my games to that point. He had graded all my games and he said, he did this wrong, he did that wrong. He's late for training, he's doing this, he's sloppy, all over the shot. The next international break, which was like a month into the season or something like that, I was back up at Carrington doing a bit of training with Man United. The first day I got back in, Man United, Alex Ferguson, straight in his office. Wow. The first taste of the hairdryer.
You got roasted.
Really? Roasted. Absolutely nailed.
What
and
did he
I
say?
Sat there. He just nailed me.
Just went for it.
Nailed me. You don't do that. You're a Man United player. Yeah. You do not do that. That at the time at Man United, you didn't do that.
Because you're representing them as well when you go
exactly.
out.
Exactly. So. Of course you are, yeah.
You hadn't been through an academy. You kind of were thrown in. Not an excuse.
Yeah,
not
sure.
an excuse.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say the professionalism came at Watford and you
I
had,
just didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was.
And you had the other goalie, Alec Chamberlain, was a real mentor of yours.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, for sure. He was. He was absolutely class. So, yeah, that was a massive turning point for me. At that point, we were probably, like I say, only a month into the season. So I'd only played 3 or 4 games, but that was a massive turning point for me. And Alec, like I say, Alec Chamberlain really took me under his wing, sort of showed me the ropes. I made sure from that moment on, I was never late again. I was there, always there. I was training harder, doing all the things properly. And that's when, coincidentally, my form started to pick up as well. So I was doing better in games, finished the season really strong. The team got promoted. It was a fantastic season. We did it through the playoffs as well. The playoffs, if you can guarantee one way to get promoted from the Championship, League One, League Two, to do it through the playoffs.
So that was
a roller coaster, but it's if you can win it, oh.
Cardiff,
yeah, Millennium Stadium.
So
yeah.
We had a coach. I remember, again, I remember it was like playoff and I was down playing squash and you rang and go, doing a coach.
Yeah.
Doing a coach. All your friends, all your family, put a coach on. Oh, what a day out. What a day out. Beat Leeds 3-0.
Yeah.
Incredible day out. Like your whole family, all your friends, like everyone from Leamington that you know, like on this big coach. And we just had an outrageous day out on the lash.
Just got on it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, proper. We were the same. It was wicked because, like I said, we've just been promoted. We've been the big time in the Premier League. I'm still only on loan, but I'm thinking, please, I've got to come back here next season. But I have to come back on loan next season.
As a fan and like as your mate, that was my favourite year of your career.
Yeah.
Because we were at an age where none of us had kids. And me, your brothers, your sister, like Russ and like Luke and
all
everyone,
the mates and stuff.
We went home and away. I would say we did nearly every game.
At least 90%.
Ipswich away, Norwich away. Like we'd go and there'd be like 8-10 of us every week. What a brilliant, brilliant year. And I remember actually probably Watford thing, it was your first few games. So what the story you've just told rings true. Because at Watford, after the games, in the first few games, you'd meet us in the pub at the end of the road for a pint.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
which is absolutely outrageous.
There's a pub at the top of Vicarage Road and I would literally meet you all in there. And like, it got to a point though, eventually, that people knew I was going to be coming in there. So I was just getting mobbed and I was like, Dad, I can't keep coming in, all right? I'm just getting trouble. I'm going to get in trouble kind of thing. Especially if you have a bad game, you're just going to get abused and stuff. So, no, it was absolutely wicked. But like I said, that we got promoted and then, for me, it was so important that I just spent the next year on loan with Watford, which thankfully happened as well. So spent the next season on loan at Watford. And even though we got relegated, I learned so much. That second season in the Premier League especially, it was just the biggest learning curve for me. I knew for a fact I was going to be busy week in, week out. I knew I'd have saves to make. I knew I'd be always under the microscope, in action. I was playing for Man United, but out on loan at Watford. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I do honestly believe that is the biggest season in my career for me.
Yeah. Like even with Watford though, like you did, I remember, like you did professionalise massively, but we still had some fun down in Watford, didn't we? Like some nights out down
for
there.
Sure,
and who's either got Richard Lee was there.
Oh, we had a good school of lads, to be fair. The lads loved getting on it. It was wicked.
He's what? Every finger in every pie going, Richard Lee.
Yeah, the businessman. The businessman,
yeah.
Been on Dragon's Den, all that. Do you remember that?
Brilliant.
And he actually got it. It was for the cap company, New Era Caps and stuff like that. And he sold it to Bannatyne, I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think it actually went through though, to be fair. I don't want to talk about it.
But that was interesting because I remember like you'd like Richard come back to Leamington and have nights out with us lot.
Yeah.
And I always remember because it was like the goalkeepers would always play the game of, do you remember there was a sign in Leamington like who could jump the highest? Because Richard Lee always backs himself as he's not the tallest goalkeeper in the world.
5'10", isn't
he? Yeah, but he says, I'm not the tallest goalkeeper in the world, but I can jump the highest, right? So I remember you and Richard Lee and there were like these signs that were like, honestly, so far off the ground, and you two were like trying to get your fingertips, and then you had like people like Alty and Wedge trying to hit them, like non-footballers,
big slugs of men, like weighing about 3 foot 20 kilos,
about 3 foot lower than you and Rich Lee.
Oh, it's
great times though, weren't they?
Great times, mate. We had some great times. That's when like you're young and free, and like you ain't got kids, and it's just nice. Do you know what I mean? It's as you get older, you learn to slow it down a little bit.
Yeah. And then you were back to Man United.
Yeah. So straight away the next season, I'd done my crew shirt at the end of the season. So that next season was basically pretty much a write-off. I remember I played two games towards the end of the season because all the goalies got injured. I made my debut. It was against Derby.
I went with your family and you had an absolute blinder.
Yeah, good game. Really good. For the first game in like 9 months or whatever.
Yeah. Because you got thrown in, didn't you?
Yeah, I got thrown in massively. Made a couple really good saves. Kenny Miller, yeah. Yeah, we ended up winning the game 1-0. I think it was Ronaldo who scored. Yeah, it was Ronaldo who scored. Ball over to the top and he just put it back across Roy Carroll. But yeah, that was my first taste of playing for Man United. And boy, was it a different world. My God, it was a different world. Yeah. Like the intensity, the scrutiny, like the microscope. Wow, you had to be on it like 24/7. You had to live Man United. If you're playing for Man United, especially then, you had to live football. You had to live Man United.
I'll tell you what, the moment like, even then, as like a young man and watching it, and the moment in my mind that kind of clicked and you go, these guys are a different breed, they're a different level, is you used to play in the League Cup, didn't you? And you won the League Cup twice with Man United. And I remember the 1 year you invited me, Luke and Andy down, and we got on the train at the platform at Manchester with the club directors. Martin Edwards was there, Bobby Charlton was there. So we've gone down as guests of you, and we're on the train down, lovely little bit of champagne and scrambled egg and all this lot. And
couple chavs on the train, giving it big and like they're all posh and that, like scrambled egg.
Oh, look, it's Fozzie's mates and all that.
Bringing the tone right down.
Yeah, well, I did on the way home. And I remember on the way home, like the cups being passed around, but we were on the train on the way home. And like that was your big game for you. We won the cup and we're kind of having a few beers and all this lot. But I just remember the tone on the train was, it wasn't a celebration.
Yeah, the lads weren't allowed to have a beer. I wasn't allowed to have a beer.
No, I think we were
dying to go out. We went out actually.
We went out, didn't we?
But it's not like we could all have a drink on the train.
It was business as usual. It was not a thing.
Yeah, we had training tomorrow basically.
Yeah,
wow. So suck it up. Like get back, get ready for training tomorrow.
But was it the League Cup? We did have a night out.
We went out in Hale in suburbia.
Because I remember we were on the table next to John O'Shea and his mates because they missed the train and he paid £600 for them to get a cab down or something.
Yeah.
And then we've gone out to the casino and we've given it a right good go in the casino. Nicky Hunt and Ivan Klasnic, we were. Do you remember Bolton?
How random that Ivan Klasnic and Nicky Hunt were on our table. It was mad. It was mad, isn't it? But that's Man United at that time. Like, I didn't operate in that world. Do you know what I mean? I'm professional, but I don't live football. Do you know what I mean? I love playing on a Saturday, but I can't live football. I can sort of train a few times a week and then I live for the weekend. I don't know, I buzz off the Saturday afternoon, but I can't live it 24/7. For me, there's much more important things in life than just football.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had a couple of bad games, a couple of mistakes, and that was it.
Yeah,
really,
it was,
wasn't it?
It was,
like when you sharpish. Look at, but you look since at like people like David De Gea and the chances, and you know, he's not had the best year or two compared to previous years because he set the bar so high. But I, as your mate, not exactly impartial, but I look back and think, You were bombed out after quite quick.
I know what you're saying, but I think they could just see that I wasn't cut out for it at that moment in time. Do you know what I mean? I think they could just see that. And I still fully think it's the right decision for me to move on. I remember Alex Ferguson pulling me into his office and saying, "Ben, listen, we've had an offer for you from Birmingham City. We as a club think it's a really good opportunity for you. What do you think? What are your thoughts on it?" And I remember straight away saying, "Yeah, incredible. Thank you. I just think I need to go." And they knew that as well. They knew I needed to go.
Was it a relief for you?
Oh, for sure. Like I say, the microscope of it, you can't move. If you're a Man United player and you go out up north somewhere, you can't move. People know who you are and you're getting pictured. I guarantee it'll be worse now. Like, you would not be able to go out because with camera phones and all that kind of stuff, they would be literally videoing you 24/7. People will have everything that you've done on that night out documented somewhere. So that for me, like, I couldn't enjoy that. I can't enjoy even like now, like we get quite a bit with Cycling GK, and their people are brilliant, aren't they? But they are full on still kind of thing. They want a video and all that kind of stuff, like, which is understandable because I think YouTube's a different world, isn't it? Where like people feel a bit more of a connection with you.
Yeah.
Whereas with footballers, they're looking to try and stitch you up or catch a bit of footage of somebody doing something.
Well, that's the difference when YouTube has this like personal feel to it.
For sure.
And you're giving out your personality every day. So the people that watch you, they know you.
They know me, and I quite like that. So they come up to me and they're more personable.
They can have a chat to you.
They can have a chat to me about something. And I'm like, oh,
but I understand. Wicked. I understand it because when I look at these huge footballers, I just don't get their lives. I don't know what they do.
Yeah, for sure.
As soon as that whistle's blown, that's it. That's the last I hear.
I think it's because they're so scared to show what they do in case somebody has an opinion about it, or they think that's not right, you shouldn't be doing that, you shouldn't be here now, you've got a game in 2 days.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You should be recovering, you should live your life just revolving around football. But again, that's not me. I wasn't able to do that at that moment in time and in my life. I couldn't live football 24/7. So the opportunity to leave came, and I did. I was so relieved for it, the pressure off my shoulders at that time. So finally I can breathe again, kind of thing.
And you're a bit of a home bird.
Yeah, for sure.
The Birmingham living local again. And then again it was there's some nice little stories that you just pop in your mind
as you're talking about.
I remember it was like when you signed for Birmingham, the phone calls come out and I remember you ring me and Luke and go, "Sign for Birmingham, it's now the Thursday, what are you doing on Sunday?" And I'm like, nothing, going to work on Monday. "We're going to Vegas." Me, you and Luke, we're going to Vegas. It's on me. I've signed for Blues. Let's just go and have a bit of fun.
Boom.
And everything. What a trip.
But it was lovely though, because like I say, when you play for them sort of teams, like the focus isn't on you so much kind of thing. You're not a Man United player anymore. Just also, it doesn't matter if somebody in a place hears that there's a Man United player there, that's it. Like, it's like, oh my God, where is he? Everybody needs to find out and everybody needs to know. But when you're just a footballer, like, you can just go about your business and have a nice time. And we did, didn't we? We just went to Vegas, had a lovely time.
Well, the thing is about Vegas,
people aren't watching and stuff. It's wicked.
I think one person recognised you in Vegas in 4 days.
Yeah.
And that was Adam Chambers from Watford. Was it Adam Chambers?
Yeah, Adam Chambers.
Adam Chambers from Watford.
Yeah.
He was there with
Luke
his brother.
Chambers,
Luke Chambers.
Luke Chambers.
But they were there
Chambers
together.
Brother. Yeah.
And it was like, okay. And it's really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely. It was lovely.
Good job, because that was a bit of a trip, that was.
It was wicked, really, Sessionville. But I remember getting on the plane, I just signed for Blues. And do you remember they had the four big blue noses on the seats in front of us? And they were like, "Oh, you've just signed, brilliant. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you." "No, you know, we've had Joe Hart last season. Like, all the best." Like, following on from that, I was like, "Cheers, lads."
Well, Blues next season was, you were there for one season.
Yeah, only one season at Blues, yeah.
But what a contrasting season that was.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know what? I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I know we got relegated.
Great club.
Great club, massive club. Honestly, they've got a chance that they should be a lot bigger than what they are. I think obviously the owners and stuff like that, it's a different story for a different time, but they're a sleeping giant, they really are. And that season for me was absolutely amazing. I was back home, I was living my best life, I was literally playing football with a bunch of lads that I love playing football with. Like I say, we got relegated. We shouldn't have got relegated. Our team was way too good to get relegated, but it happened. But on the journey there, we did go and win the League Cup. And that for me is still that's my biggest moment in football. I've played for my country, I've made my England debut, I've played against Spain, Brazil, France. Doesn't matter. That one moment when that full-time whistle goes, when we win the League Cup against Arsenal at Wembley for Birmingham City, the first time that they've won a trophy in God knows how long. It gives me goosebumps
goosebumps. When you talk about clubs being too good to go down and Didn't Wigan win the FA Cup and get relegated?
Yeah.
Because when you won the League Cup, because the Cup final's quite early in the football
it's like,
season.
March-ish.
You
March
went
time,
on a horrible
rotten
run, didn't you?
Where everybody was so emotionally drained, honestly. They would. It just. It's like that final had taken so much out of all of us.
And look at the players.
Carry on.
Look at the players.
Oh,
you
mate,
had Lee Bowyer.
Yeah.
Barry Ferguson.
Yeah.
Scott Dan Roger Johnson. Stephen Carr.
Seb Larson.
Obafemi Martin. You had a...
Proper
very
team.
Good team.
Really, really good team.
And then the young lad, Jack Butland, was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, Jack Butland was there.
And then Big Mike Taylor is number two.
Big Mike Taylor is number two. Jack Butland, I remember him. He was only an 18-year-old kid at the time, but he was already 6'4". He was like a bloke anyway. He was really mature. You could just see he was going to go and have a
I remember. You, I remember you saying when you were
back
at
every
Blues,
day, wasn't I? Saying,
he's
what
a player.
What
he's a
goalie.
Player.
He's going to be a monster. I remember saying you say it to him all the time, mate, you're going to be some goalie, you. You're going to, you can just tell. The ones, when you see these certain types of young players, you can just tell. Because it's not necessarily just their ability and their skill, their technical, this, that, whatever. It's what they've got in between their heads. And you can see it with certain players. Little moves they make on the pitch, little preempting stuff. Do you know what I mean? They're pointing where they want the ball. They're talking, they're shouting, they're telling players. They're 18, 19 years old and they're doing that. That, for me, is the biggest indicator of whether they're going to be a player or not.
Yeah, and I think because obviously then you moved on to West Brom. Really sad seeing them go down.
Guys, before we talk about West Brom, can I just do a big shout out to Miles, a Football Manager, for the official Football Manager kit. Look at this beauty, sponsored by TikTok. We have got War Child, the main sponsor, on the middle of the shirt. How awesome is this? This is an absolutely beautiful kit, by the way. So big shout out to Miles. War Child is a charity set up for children who are displaced through war. So big shout out to them guys. Absolutely smashing it. Absolutely love the shirt as well. It's about to, isn't it? Come on.
Yeah, it's lovely, that is, mate.
Right, West Brom. Come on, give it to me.
West Brom. So this is like your long-term home in
my club. This is my club. Yeah. So this is the club that I have spent the majority of my career at. We had seven or 8 years of Premier League football. Absolutely the best years of my life as a footballer. The kids grew up to be West Brom fans. I will always be a West Brom fan. I can only ever say really, really good things about West Brom. The people that I met along the way were literally friends for life. You know, people like Boaz Myhill will be my friend for life. Like some of the guys I got to play with, some seriously incredible players, Romelu Lukaku, people like that. You ask Romelu the same, you ask him about West Brom, he'll only tell you good things, honestly.
And so when you talk about Boaz, I've had the privilege of meeting him recently, absolutely top bloke, another goalkeeper obviously. So this goalkeepers union we hear lots and lots about, this is a thing, right?
Monster thing, mate. Absolutely proper thing. One thing I've learnt in my 20 years of playing football is you very, very rarely come across a dickhead goalkeeper. You very rarely do.
I know one.
Who? Honestly, it's goalies are the normal people in the changing rooms. We're like the glue. We're normally quite
level-headed
chatty.
Guys.
The level-headed guys, the calm guys. If we do something good, we don't shout and scream about it. We just go about our business, understated, under the, you know what I mean, under the radar, all that kind of stuff. We genuinely are those types of guys. We all seem to really get on well. Like I say, the goalkeepers union, it's like, because we spend so much more time together. When we go out to training, we will go out, the three, four goalkeepers, we'll go out together. We'll all sit next to each other anyway. But then we go out together, we'll spend 35, 40 minutes together just catching balls and, you know what I mean, booting balls at each other, all that kind of stuff. You just learn this sort of camaraderie and like real bond between the goalkeepers. And I honestly don't think I could name you any goalkeepers I've come across that have been whoppers.
But this is the thing, because a lot of football fans might think, but they're in competition with each other. And even like with last season, you got injured and Dan Backman came in and Dan did really well at the Euros, did really well last season. I think people struggle to wrap their head around that. No, it's not. Yes, people want to be the number one, But you like Dan, you like Pontus at Watford and Rob Elliott. Young lad Rob Elliott, yeah. And Adam Parks.
Adam Parks.
You all get on great.
For sure, because for me personally, because I've been there and done it and seen it, I know the pressures and how hard it is to be a first-team goalkeeper, to play week in, week out and keep your level at a high level. I know how hard it is. It's very difficult. So when there's somebody ahead of me doing it in my place, for example, like last season, Dan Batman, he's playing week in, week out. The guy just took to it like a duck to water. Honestly, he was absolutely brilliant. It's like I think he had one loan out on to Kilmarnock.
Kilmarnock,
the season or the season before that, maybe. He did well there, don't get me wrong. But to come straight in halfway through a season and just play flawlessly the whole season.
Yeah, he did
honestly,
well.
It
he
takes
well.
Some doing, you know. Yeah. It really does. But I can appreciate how hard that is for somebody to come in and to do that. So I have to sit back and I have to admire that. I have to be... my role there changes from being the goalkeeper to... getting behind him. I have to get behind him. I have to give him little tips, tricks, advice, help him when he needs it, and just show him the way that I've learned how to do it myself, kind of thing. And like I say, as an older goalkeeper, even an older player, you just learn to do that to players.
And then even last season, you've had Rob Elliott come in from Newcastle.
What a bloke, wicked bloke.
Well, he's what, number three?
Yeah.
And Rob will know the lay of the land.
For sure.
But as a player, I remember when he signed and after a week or two and you're like, oh, it's brilliant to have Rob around. What a guy.
Yeah.
And again, it's what people always forget is it's a work environment.
Yeah,
and yes,
sure.
It's brilliant. Yes, it's great. And a lot of players are very, very well paid. I get all that. But you are going to work and to work with good people.
Do you know what it is? It's these players, they don't have any value. Okay, they're not valuable players. They're not worth anything. You can't sell them. Okay, they're not assets. What they are, though, is invaluable to the team around the place. Their worth to the team is invaluable. They are like Rob is like me. He's like the glue of the dressing room. He doesn't shut up talking, but you need people like that. Do you know what I mean? You have to have these guys that are going, lads, I'm sweating my tits off today. And then it starts a conversation instead of, because nowadays, young lads just sit on the phone. I'm not even joking, right? They just sit there on the phone, scrolling.
Mate, how old are you?
Mate,
how old are you?
I swear in my life, right? They just scroll. That's all they do. And I'm walking in going, get off your fucking phones, yeah? Like, talk, please.
I would have thought that would have been banned from...
Nah, because it's... The kids nowadays, they are brought up on their phones. It's like their life is in their hand. They are not going to just give it up, okay? So it will never be banned. But they do it in the change and they just sit there on the phone. And
scrolling.
Like the amount of times we've come in, me or Rob or some of the older lads, and go, lads, just interact, just have a laugh, yeah?
Talk to
people. Don't just sit there in your own world, all right?
Right, this is a hell of a tangent here. We were on baggies a minute ago.
It's
brilliant though, isn't it?
This is what you want. This is what you want.
So baggies.
Yeah.
You were there. Talk us through your managers when you were there then.
Okay, the first manager who signed me was Roy Hodgson. Probably one of the best managers I've played for sure. What a guy, lovely bloke. He gets a bit of a bad rep for his time at Liverpool and for England. But for me, as a bloke, he's right up there. Honestly, what a just lovely, lovely bloke. If you're doing it properly and playing by the rules and playing by the book, he will back you like you wouldn't believe.
And tell us about the World Cup under Roy Hodgson, because you played in the final group stage game when we got knocked out in Brazil.
Yeah, so again, for me as a sort of checklist of my career, to say that I played at a World Cup finals is something I never ever dreamed I'd be able to do. So I will always be indebted to Roy Hodgson for giving me that opportunity. I remember him telling me, actually, we'd obviously lost our first two matches against Italy and Uruguay, and we'd been knocked out early doors out of the tournament, but we had one more match left against Costa Rica, and it was about 2 days before the game, and he just pulled me to one side in training and said, listen, I really appreciate everything you've done for us in the tournament, you know, just being around the place, getting behind Joe Hart, who was a goalkeeper. Just sort of adding to the environment, being good people, helping everybody out, do you know what I mean, working hard in training, shooting sessions, all that kind of stuff, and he said, listen, I appreciate literally everything you've done, you've been top class, so you're going to play in the last final game against Costa Rica. And I was like, Roy, mate, what a guy. I was like, wow, what a guy. So yeah, to be able to sort of come off training and ring my wife, ring my mates, ring my mum and dad and tell them that I'm going to be playing the game, they were like, that is...
Staying on the international topic, what was it like getting your call up for England?
The very first one.
Yeah, yeah. So you get the phone call or someone goes up to you.
The very first time.
What actually happened?
Okay, the very first time I was on holiday actually in Dubai with Kate, and it was so hot. It was miserable. It was 40 degrees. It was too hot. We couldn't really enjoy it. And
so you know nothing about England.
I know nothing about anything at the minute. Nothing. Okay. And one of the England goalkeepers, I think it was Rob Green, got injured in a friendly game. He did a really bad injury, actually. He pulled like the ligament, tendon, everything off the bone in his groin. It was horrible. Yeah. So I got a text message from a number basically saying, "Hi, Ben, this is Michelle, the England secretary. I'm going to give you a ring like in the next few minutes, basically. Yeah. You've been called up to the England senior team for training next week and these dates sort of thing." And I got it. I straight away was like, "Wow, what on earth?" And like, okay, I wasn't sure, because it's just a number. You never know, do you?
Yeah.
So I showed it to Kay, and she was like, "Well, just wait and see when they call." Then she rung anyway, and it was Michelle. And anybody that's been with the England team will know Michelle. Michelle's like the secretary. She's brilliant. Yeah. She runs the place, basically.
Incredible.
So she was like, "No, listen, we'll sort everything out." And I was just at the time, I was like, "This holiday cost me loads of money."
did they sort you out?
Yeah, they paid for it all. It was wicked.
Yeah.
But like, we were 2 days into our holiday, a 2 week holiday, and I'm thinking, I'll come to Dubai, like, business class flight. This has cost me about 10 grand. Like, any chance of you lot sorting this out? She was like, "Oh, don't worry about that. We'll sort out that. That's fine." And they did. Like, big shout out. They booked the flight the next day, everything like that. Everything sorted.
First
later
class.
On. It was business. It was nice.
Yeah,
it was lovely.
Yeah.
And I remember, it was funny because I remember landing back at Heathrow or whatever it was. And there was like a cameraman waiting for me, like from one of the newspapers or whatever. And to be fair, he was cool. He was like, we landed and I was walking through the thing and he went, "Hi Ben, I'm from the whatever. Do you mind if I'm Sky Sports? Do you mind if I just like video you walking through the terminal?" I was like, "Yeah, fine, mate. Sweet as a nut. We just got off a 7-hour flight. Looked like a bag of shit, but it's fine." Like, so he's just like following us, and I was like, "Oh god." Anyway, but yeah, that was the very first time I got called into England, and that was under Sven. That was under Sven Goran Eriksson, and I didn't really have too much to do to him. I was a young kid in the team, kind of thing. I never, you know what I mean? I was only there for like 10 days for the, I think it was the World Cup or something. But no, it was a wicked experience. That was so my very first day. It was mad though.
Michelle must have the coolest job ever, because she gets to phone up
everybody,
you know, people, and say, you know, you're
normally it's just a text message.
Yeah.
For new players kind of thing, she'd have to ring them and speak to them. But normally when you get called,
that's what I'm on about.
Yeah, for the very first one.
Calling up
that
a new
surprise,
player.
Yeah.
That must be incredible. Because you're making their life.
Exactly.
Like, that is...
It will be akin to like ringing somebody and saying, "You've won the lottery."
As a footballer, playing for the national team.
Pinnacle,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's number one.
So a lot of the players that will get called into the team, obviously, we're going to be young kids as well. You're talking 18, 19, 20 years old. And to hear the excitement on the other end of the phone must be a wicked feeling.
That must be, And what a cool job.
Yeah, really, really cool job.
This is the thing I find interesting talking to you about, finding out these stories.
The little details.
About Michelle, you know, and the phone calls and the text she gets to do.
Yeah.
That stuff to me.
Normally,
like,
it's just
really
a text. Honestly, it's normally just a text. So if there's an England match next week, for example, you'll get a text on a Wednesday or Thursday and say, "You've been selected for the men's senior team. Report here at this time at this. Bring your boots, bring your shin pads, goalie gloves, all that kind of stuff." That's how it works.
Who were the characters in the England dressing room when you were there then?
For sure.
Because I remember watching the send-off before the World Cup, which was Jamaica at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And that was 5-0.
With Crouchy when he was doing the robot.
Did
and stuff
the
like
robot.
That. Yeah, that was that sort of... That was a good... Do you know what? I actually really enjoyed them sort of players, to be fair. Like you say, Crouchy's the man. He's the man. Like,
need to get him on the pod.
We do need to get him on the pod. He would be wicked
Crouchy,
on the pod.
Crouchy, please come on.
Crouchy, please come on. We love you, mate, honestly. Like, but he deserves everything he gets. Like, someone like Pete Crouch deserves everything he gets, because he is just the nicest bloke. Honestly, he's just the nicest bloke. And he's so calm, so laid back. He's got no airs or graces. He is what he is. And you can see that he's not acting, is he? You can just see that's just who he is.
Like a nice guy.
So, well done, Pete. You deserve it, Geez. You deserve everything, mate.
Yeah, sure.
Very good, very good. So, Mr. Hodgson.
Yeah.
Then who was next up at West Brom?
It was Steve Clarke. So we had a year under Steve Clarke. It was a season we did actually really, really well. I think we were fourth at Christmas time, which is unheard of for a team like West Brom. Did really, really well. It was a strong season. That was Romelu Lukaku's season.
What a
player, mate. It took him... I think he'll even admit to this as well. It probably took him 3 or 4 months to find his feet at West Brom. But when he found it, my gosh... Lads, phenom, like a beast, an absolute beast.
Because was he there? He wasn't there at the same time as Anelka, was he?
Yes, he was.
So up front for West Brom,
Nicholas Anelka and Romelu Lukaku. Incredible.
What a joke.
Incredible. Yeah, he was. He, you could just tell. You knew. Like he finished the season so strongly that it was. He was either going to go back to Chelsea and rip it up, or he was going to get a monster move. And he got a monster move. But he's lovely bloke as well. Honestly, Romelu Lukaku, yeah, one of the biggest players in the world at the minute. Yeah. One of the nicest blokes you can meet as well. Just so calm, chill, lovely, open. Happy to like speak to people, help people. Like people like that deserve everything they've got.
Sure. Skip forward a little bit, and then you're into Tony Pulis era.
Tony Pulis era got a really bad rep from the West Brom fans. They did not like Tony Pulis. In the end, they did not like him. But I can only say from what I saw up close and personal, what a wicked bloke. I know I've said that about most people on this pod so far, but wicked bloke, honestly. Tony Pulis, what a guy. Loves his cycling. He was just black and white. He would tell you exactly how it was. If you've been shit, he would put an arm around you and say, "Son, you've been shit. You're not playing next week." And that's how it was. At least you knew where you stood with him, honestly. I don't think there's not many players that will have too many bad things to say about Tony Pulis. Honestly, he would just tell you plain and simple what he wanted from you, and that was it. And his style of play was his style of play. Everybody knew that like you were getting the ball forward as quickly as you could, and it was going to be a bunch of big lads, and we were going to try and score a goal and then just hang on for a 1-0 win. But you it stayed was effective.
You stayed in the league every year. For sure. And I remember we used to come and watch you, and that it was boring.
Yeah, it was. I know, it was I understand. Boring. For as a goalkeeper, it was not boring. I promise you, it was wicked. Because if somebody passed the ball back to me, I knew what I was doing with it. I wasn't trying to clip it out to the right wing, left back, left, right back. I was nailing it as hard as I could up to that 6'4", 6'5", centre forward. And he was trying to get it down. And it was, you just learned to live within your, those things. You didn't have, there was no sort of like, plan B, plan C. It was literally that and that only. So as a goalkeeper, it was super easy. Like you stop the ball going in the back of the net and you kick it as far as you can. But I do understand the frustration from the fans because it can't be great to watch at times.
So obviously we've mentioned the two lads up front, and then you had some really good players in your time at West Brom.
Mate, we just had, do you know what we had? We had the sort of, we just had a British core of players. We had a British core of players, and there's a lot to be said about that. You know exactly what you're going to get from them. They might not have the best flair or skills or speed or technique, but you know you're going to get 7, 8 out of 10 every single week from them because of just pure effort, pure work rate. And that's what we were. We knew that we were just going to outwork teams. So the likes of people like Shane Long, he would not
stop running.
He would run his tits off every single game. He was the best at jumping for a ball I've ever seen in my life. Like, as a goalie, playing against Shane Long would be a nightmare because he would shut you down. He wouldn't give you a second's breath. He actually scored the fastest goal in Premier League history against me. I've let that goal in.
You've got some records, you have.
I know. How cool is that? Because we kicked off. The ball came back to Craig Cathcart. Craig Cathcart went to clear it up the pitch. Shane Long shut him down, hit his chest, bounced down to him. He chipped me. It's a goal. 5.5 seconds, something silly like that. Yeah. Outrageous. But that is him in a nutshell. That's exactly what he did. And we had loads of them players.
Brunty.
Chris Brunt, one of the best left foots, by the way, I've ever played with. It was incredible. West Brom fans know what I'm talking about here. Best left foots I've ever played with. Graham Dorans, James Morrison, Gareth McCauley, Jonas Olsen. You know what you're going to get from these players. And that goes a long way, you know. Being reliable and knowing exactly what you're going to get from every single player week in, week out. It's worth its weight in gold.
Gareth McCauley was seriously underrated.
I honestly think one of the best free signings in the history of ever. He was incredible.
Craig Dawson,
again, cheapest chips we got from Rochdale, but he's a workhorse. He's a dog. He will put in the hard yards. You know you're going to get 6, 7, 8 out of 10 out from him every single week.
Absolutely fantastic. And then it was a hard one, wasn't it, when West Brom got relegated?
Because
that was your home for a very, very long time, and you're very, very close to the club. And it was a tough one for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a tough one because I always said that I wanted to finish my career at West Brom because I loved it there so much. Like I say, it was home. And I think the thing was, though, that I was so set in my ways at West Brom that I got probably a little bit too comfortable. And the move to Watford came about, and it was a chance, obviously, to first and foremost, to get back in the Premier League and play Premier League football
and
again.
And a team that was very close to your heart.
A very nice team, a team I'd been to before. I knew the lay of the land. I knew a few of the lads already. And it wasn't so much of a big transition. But I always said I didn't want to leave West Brom. But a few things changed behind the scenes, and people were promised to be looked after. It wasn't just people. They were my friends. They were my best friends. They were lifelong friends that I knew and loved and I'd been to work with for the last 5-6 years, and they were told one thing, that they were going to get contracts and looked after and this and that, and then they reneged on those promises and didn't do what they said they were going to do, basically. And that left a bit of a sad taste in my mouth, really. But it, you know, I'll always look back on West Brom as a really, really fun time for me, because it was a lovely club. The fans were so good. The fans were absolutely incredible, in fact. And definitely the highlight of my whole career will be my one big long stint at West Brom.
Yeah, and I think like that was the time, you've mentioned it before, but like our kids are similar ages, and that's when they started going to the football together. Yeah. And like every season at West Brom, you'd buy your kids and like my lads the kit, and they'd go to the little football training together in their baggies kits. Yeah. And it was nice because that's when our kids, like even now with Louis and with George, and they always look for West Brom, don't they?
For sure. It's the, like you say, when obviously I'm at Watford now, but and I'll look for the Watford score first. Your kids will, my kids will look for the Watford score. The second score they'll look for is West Brom, for sure. Because we, obviously it's a shame they've just been relegated, but they're again a massive club, and I know for a fact they'll bounce back.
And it's interesting as a dynamic, so kind of people always say to me, who do you support? And I'm like, well, Watford, because kind of Ben's there. And I know it sounds a little bit, but as a fan and a friend, like, you know that all my family are Wolves fans growing up, and you know some of your family are and whatnot. But when you're close to a player, it, like a player itself, it kind of goes out the window to a lesser or greater extent, because you think you signed for Watford back in the day, and we go and watch home and away, and you grow an affinity to that team massively. And then you go to Blues, and Blues and Wolves, West Brom and Wolves. And football fans will hate to hear this, like, but you kind of follow where you play, and then
for
like
sure,
as a Wolves fan historically, and then you're going, oh, West Brom today, and you know, you play for West Brom, so you look for West Brom, you support West Brom.
Oh, I was a Tottenham fan as a kid. I was a big Tottenham fan. My brother made me be a Tottenham fan. But as soon as you become a professional footballer, you have to forget all that. You do. You just forget all that.
Goes to your network around you as
exactly,
well.
Exactly. It does. It does. It spreads out as well to your network around you. So, like I say, my kids will always be West Brom fans. We will always look out for Blues. We'll always look out for Watford. You know, it's the way that it goes. You will always look out for them.
I look out for Watford now.
Yeah, for sure. You do.
I do,
yeah.
Honestly. Yeah.
You edit the videos,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah.
I hope you know when the Watford games are.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but you know what I mean. It's just like, I now care about Watford.
For sure.
I really do.
I think the funny thing with the Cycling GK is, I think we have turned a lot of neutrals into Watford fans, into just to see how the club are going. Do you know what I mean? A lot of people want to see how we're performing, how
comments,
we're doing.
Comment below if you are turning into a Watford fan, and you check the scores every week.
And then tell us your favourite player. Pretty sure I know who you're going to say your favourite player is, but, and it can't be me, obviously, don't say me. I know one player who I'm sure you'll say it will be, but I do. I think we've turned a lot of neutral football fans into Watford fans.
Fair play.
And it's really great because you're taking it to, obviously, we launched the channel during COVID, and it's just the three of us run the channel, and it is really nice. And
we are still winging it. We are. Even the channel, we're winging it, aren't we? We like bounce ideas off each other and go, should we just try that? Yeah, sod it, let's go.
Yeah, but we
number
have a lot
one
of fun.
Sport podcast in
number
the UK.
One sport podcast.
But we have a lot of fun, don't we? We have a huge amount of fun. And with one eye on, you know, you are 38 years old. You are an absolute dinosaur, bless you.
I know.
But with one eye on the future, you're not going to be playing for 5-6 years. That's a fact.
Heck no.
And it's a nice transition, isn't it, at Cycling GK, because obviously you've committed 100% to football. You know, it's match day, you're in. You're in the zone, but I'm justifying it for you.
No, you don't, because it's what I said earlier about when I was at Man United. I can't live and breathe football. I can't. Yeah. I need other things to do. I need other things to take my mind off it and turn my attention to other things. And this, for me, has been the biggest sort of eye-opener ever, honestly. YouTube, the world of the community, the possibilities, outrageous, honestly. Yeah, I absolutely buzz off it so much. The thing for me is like the interaction between us and the community and what they want to see and how they feel part of it. They feel part of the story. Mm-hmm. They love the characters. They love Basler. They love Will Hughes.
So Watford back in the big league, in the Premier League this season, shaping up nicely. Pre-season's going well. And you've signed some good players.
We have signed some good players, mate. Some really decent signings. Josh King, really, really good centre-forward. Honestly, he's hit the ground running as well. Looks really sharp in training. A couple nice midfielders. There's a guy called Imran Luzer, who I think we can expect a lot.
He's called what?
Imran Luzer. L-O-U-Z-A, but he's a baller, honestly. You wait and see. He's an absolute baller.
Well, I hope he is, because if he doesn't...
trust me, he's a baller.
Imri winner. Come
but
on,
no, we know the Premier League's tough. Like, me personally, I've played, I think, 18 seasons in the Premier League. I know what it's about. I know it's tough. And you need to be at 90-100% every single match day.
Danny Rose,
fantastic signing. Absolutely fantastic signing. What a guy. He's just a leader. He's a leader. You know, he talks a lot. He's got experience and people look up to him. You need those kind of guys. They are invaluable for a team like us going back into the Premier League. So yeah, it's going to be tough. I think on a personal level, we're just going to have to wait and see, guys. Honestly, I'm enjoying myself. I'm having a lovely time. I get to make my videos. We can expect some wicked stuff from Cycling GK this year. Honestly, we're going to be able to go to some of the big stadiums, the big arenas, show you what all the Liverpool's, Arsenal, Man City, Man United, show you what it looks like behind the scenes there. Do you know what I mean? I want to go and poke in doors that I've never been in before. It's going to be class. I'm going to get shirts galore. I'm going to give giveaways galore.
Love it.
Yes. It's going to be absolutely wicked, because I think people have just bought into the Cycling GK so much, you know, the people that they feel real connections with, the people that you don't normally get to see at football clubs, like Baz, the coach driver, like
Big Baz. Can we just talk about him for a minute?
Yeah, let's talk about Big Baz. I think Big Baz deserves his own section, doesn't he? What a guy.
So obviously this is a podcast and it's going to go out on Spotify and Apple and everywhere else. But for those that watch the Cycling GK YouTube channel, Big Bazler, tell us about Bazler and his rise to fame.
So Bazler is the coach driver, the Watford FC coach driver. A legend of a bloke. Honestly, just the most down to earth, nice. He's like a South Londoner. He's like proper big
Millwall.
Millwall he is. He's proper Millwall. But he's just lovely, honestly. He'll go to the end of the earth to do whatever you need you doing for. He's absolutely top
class.
And
he's blown up.
And he has blown up on the Cycling GK. He has set up his own Instagram profile called Big Bazler Watford. What is it? Put it.
It's going to be on the screen.
If you're watching on YouTube now, that is his handle. Go
like
and have a
big
look.
Big Baz got, like, Watford 20, driver.
I think he's got like 22,000 Instagram followers.
Tell us the story about.
It's a funny. I've got a couple of funny stories actually about Big Bazler, because the very first time we put his Instagram, he had just set up this new Instagram account, and you had just put it on the screen on one of the videos, hadn't you? And I was like, Bazler's Instagram's on there, go and follow him. So anyway, we were at an away game actually, and the video dropped, I think it was on a Friday, and we were away in this hotel, and I've said to Bazler early in the day, mate, listen, the video is going to drop today, so you know, you might get a few followers on Instagram from it. And he was like, oh, brilliant. So anyway, the video dropped at about 5 o'clock. I went down for dinner at 7 o'clock. He's there like in a fluster, like Big Bazler's flustering, like he's all over the shop. He's like, Ben, my phone's going, and he's holding it, and he's doing, my phone's doing this, like it just keeps popping, like he follows me. I went, shut up. He went, I've got 5,000 followers.
And he's 5,000 notifications.
Yeah, 5,000 notifications. So he's like, I don't know what to do. And he's got at this point all the other staff, like the physios, masseurs, are all laughing their heads off at him, looking at him going, well, you need to disable him doing this, and everybody's buzzing off it. It's incredible. But yeah, it was so funny to see him. And he was like, oh, what do I do? And then I was like trying to explain to him what pictures to put on and how to put them. So I think his daughter helps him a lot, to be fair. Now, he said to me, his daughter's like helped him to show him what he needs to put and the pictures he needs to
Brilliant.
Put and all that kind of stuff. But honestly, what an absolutely belting.
Wasn't it his daughter that made those cakes for you as well?
Yeah, she's the girl who made the Cycling GK. Yeah. She's made quite a few cakes for us, to be fair. Like, he's always bringing them on the coach. They are world class as well. Absolutely world class.
Bazler is a top
guy.
So
Bazler's got more followers on Instagram than the Watford manager.
The Watford manager.
A lot of the Watford players.
One funny story, actually, again. We were at lunch, and Bazler, obviously it's an away game, and we're sitting around the table and stuff, and Bazler's on the table next to us here. But we were all just joking about the fact he's got like 15,000 Instagram followers at the time or whatever. And Ben Wilmot sitting on our table, young lad Ben Wilmot, just signed for Stoke City.
England under 21 international.
Great prospect for the future, honestly. Massive prospect. And he's sitting there on our table and he's gone, he's got more followers than me. And we've kind of laughed as if he's joking. We've gone, seriously? He's gone, yeah. So now we got to the point where we're saying, Basler, you got more followers than Ben Wilmot over here. And he started chuckling. He goes, do you want me to give you a shout out on one of my pictures?
Hey, I tell you what, I had an email. I rang you both, didn't I? I had an email not long ago and it was titled Basler.
Yeah.
And it was, Tom, I don't know what I've done to upset Basler, because I only ever put positive things and comment positive things on his Instagram post, but I'm blocked.
Shut up.
I'm devastated type thing. What can you do to help? Can you speak to him? And I'm like, listen, I kind of run the Cycling GK channel here.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm not going to ring Basler up and be like, hey, unblock.
He wouldn't have done that on purpose.
No, exactly.
He would have been pressing buttons.
Yeah.
Basler would have just been pressing buttons going, what am I doing? And he would have accidentally blocked it. He wouldn't do that on purpose, I promise you guys, honestly. So guys, I absolutely buzzed off that.
Yeah.
I may be sweating my tits off because it's roasting hot in here, but I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed
it. I am sat in a pool of sweat.
It's hot, isn't it?
Oh, mate, I cannot wait to get upstairs and get an aircon.
It's lovely upstairs.
Yeah, it's nice upstairs.
It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun chatting with the boys, looking down, you know, trip down memory lane, looking at the future, and exciting times ahead.
So guys, thank you for listening. For those of you watching on YouTube, make sure you give this a big old thumbs up. Hit that subscribe button. Guys, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that.
Brilliant.
That was absolutely top class. Picking through the bones of my 20-year-long football career. The Cycling GK, the Foscast podcast is going to be even bigger and better next year. I have no doubts about that whatsoever. The only way is up. Legend.
Love it.
Woo! Cheers, guys.
Decent.